Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where, what's that sound I hear? The constant swishing of the net on a brisk fall night? The Lakers somehow leading the league in three-point shooting. My, oh my, what a melodious sound. A carmelodious sound, even.
Oh, my goodness.
Purple and gold mellow, baby. Number 9 all-time in NBA scoring. Carmelo Anthony! Stay mellow. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez. I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, it took all about...
Damn, dude. Sorry. Can I just say you were for sure top 75 podcast intros all the time.
Oh, Jonathan, thank you. Hernandez. I appreciate that. And we're talking about top 75 Carmelo Anthony, 9th all-time in NBA scoring. Tommy, it took all of about 3 games for Carmelo Anthony to somehow lead this team in scoring for one night, and that's definitely even sooner than I had anticipated, and I was pretty high on this guy having a pretty decent and sizable role. I mentioned to you at least 22 to 25 minutes. Obviously, there's some caveats here with certain guys being out, Kendrick Nunn, Wayne Ellington, Trevor Ariza, THT, etc., but even with those guys out, Frank Vogel, before the season began, said Melo would have a big role on this team. And big Melo has been. So just, we're going to get more deeply into Melo in this episode, obviously. But what were your feelings watching that Liddy game where Carmelo Anthony not only got to 9th all-time in NBA scoring, but did it in the most brash and Melo way possible with 28 points, team high of the night, 6 of 8 from 3, and was one of the main reasons why we won that game, our first game of the season.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, I can't be more impressed with Carmelo Anthony so far. I was one of the biggest skeptics of the signing. I know preseason, you were one of the biggest advocates. And look, I didn't doubt that he was going to play. I thought he was going to be in the rotation. But you were one of the big advocates of Carmelo is going to, I think he has a legit shot and maybe arguably should be in our closing rotation. And, you know, you mentioned more like he, I don't know if you mentioned it to me on this podcast or offline, but, you know, you mentioned he's going to just have like 30 point nights randomly throughout the season. And we're going to win games because of that. And we've seen like kind of both of it so far. You know, we've seen his value as a closer with our big three, just as a guy who's not afraid to step up and like take shots. Here's a big one that's like going to get like maybe ignored. We are, again, you know, for the however many year in a row, 28th in free throw percentage so far this season. Having a guy like Carmelo Anthony out there at the end of games who can hit free throws is super, super clutch. So overall, I mean, I've just been super impressed. I can't remember what your initial question was because I just got distracted thinking about how good he's been for us, but
no, that's
I've been overall really impressed. Yeah. I've been really overall impressed with his play so far.
I guess more specifically then, with regards to his performance against the Grizzlies, how shocking was that to you? Or was it not shocking at all?
It wasn't shocking because obviously this like Carmelo Anthony and this dude isn't like a meme, you know what I mean? Like Hoodie Mello, or like he had 40% shooting season playing significant minutes for the Trailblazers last year, right? Mm. But it's like you always kind of caveat all this in your head, and maybe this is just being scarred by being a Laker fan and, you know, witnessing the offense of the last, you know, yes, several, however many seasons that wasn't run by Rajon Rondo. So like, you just sort of assume that that guy's going to come here and it's not going to pan out the same way.
Yeah.
But he has been, and look, I know we're number one in the league right now as a team in 3-point shooting percentage. So like,
it's like three
games. Percentages, yeah, it's three games. These percentages like are not going to stay up at this level. And then, you know, once they drop, you start to wonder like, okay, you know, does it still look as good with the lower numbers, you know, lower percentages? I guess we'll have to wait and see. But for right now, it's been really good to see. And you can kind of see how he's going to fit on our team. And when he wants to play defense and wants to try a little bit, he's not bad at like being a body in the paint.
He's got good hands.
He's got good hands.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think so crucial because during the start of this season where we're trying to patchwork quilt together a team that's lost so much continuity, whether it be with new players or with the new injuries that have befallen us in the preseason, Carmelo Anthony's sort of been that glue guy to grease the wheels for us offensively when we're just trying to find our identity. So it's such a weight off our shoulders to just have a dude who not only spaces the floor, but gives us this different attack game in transition. I mean, we're fourth in the league currently in pace, and a lot of that is because Melo's shooting the shit out of that ball really quickly anytime he gets it. And sometimes you'd say that's a bad shot, but with the way we want to play pace-wise, not really, you know? If he misses the shot, he misses the shot, and we can get back on defense. So Melo's done a lot, and we'll get into more of that as we move along in this episode, but I'm sure you've seen these pictures, and there's no doubt that by the time this podcast comes out and people listen to it and they've watched the San Antonio game or the OKC game, Melo will probably have done something to totally bury everything like great we've been saying about him on this podcast. But regardless, I'm sure you've seen these images of the Lakers' best lineups this season. Again, it's three games. But with regards to the best three-man lineups that the Lakers have this season.
Man. Very curious.
Carmelo shows up in four out of the top five.
Oh, my God.
And Austin Reeves also shows up in four of the top five. The top best three-man lineup is Carmelo Anthony, Anthony Davis, and Austin Reeves in 12 minutes with a 70.4 net rating. So I mean, it's just ridiculous. And in any lineup that you see, Melo's going to be in there. He, I think in almost after every game, he's been top two, if not the best plus minus guy on the team. And so, yeah, everything he's done, like even net rating wise, he is second on the team with a 12.8 net rating. So it's kind of crazy. Austin That's Reeves crazy. Is first with a 56.8 net rating.
Let's go, baby.
But yes, through three games, Carmelo Anthony is second on the team with a 12.8 net rating. You caveat everything with it being three games, it being early, et cetera, et cetera. But before we move deeper into why Melo's working with the Lakers currently, I just wanted to get your thoughts on, so I have a little Melo rant to get off my chest. And it may also kind of explain why you were so... why you were semi-down on him to begin with, to start the season. But I think at this stage, I think, especially with what Melo's gone through, you know, having been out of the league and nobody picking him up and the Blazers being the only team to take a chance on him, I feel like that stigma of Melo, even with what we've seen with the Blazers the last 2 years, has remained so heavily on him that I think it's clouding the perception of him for a lot of Lakers fans, at least to start this season.
Yeah.
Where...
I know what you're
okay,
saying.
So what I'm getting at is people are overreacting to every single Carmelo Anthony ISO shot that they see on this team. And I'm like, why? Like, first of all, it's already shown that the numbers show that Carmelo Anthony is taking more catch and shoot threes and jumpers than he has even in Portland. But even if he wasn't doing that, and let's say he's given two or three post-ups a game, or he's doing his weird jab step, Swaggy P dribbles into a pull-up jump shot in the mid-range against a defender, people are losing their minds whenever they see Melo do this, as if he's doing it for 35 minutes a game, and he's doing it nine times a game, and he's actually missing more than he's making. And for me, the statistics don't even bear that out. And then two, it's like, at most, this dude is playing 27 minutes. He has accepted a bench role. He's not even a starter anymore. So why are we painting this picture that Melo is still the same Melo, and that anytime he ISOs and it's an ugly shot, that he's somehow destroying the Lakers' beautiful offense and scheme? And I'm like, what offensive scheme do we have, first of all, that people are losing their minds over Melo taking a contested jump shot? Because, again, one, he's not doing it as much. And two, even if he was doing it as much, this, sadly, is the type of team where you need a guy who has the balls to take those shots. And that shot against the Grizzlies in the fourth quarter, where LeBron James dumped it down into Melo in the post, you know the shot I'm talking about. He took a turnaround fadeaway jump shot and missed it. Some people were freaking out over that. And I'm like, why? Yeah, this is nice. A shot that Melo has made time and time again. Him being 36 years old does not impede him from being able to make that shot that's in his bag even to this day. It's what made him ninth all-time in the NBA. So even with all those caveats of him taking more three-point shots, more catch-and-shoot threes, that's great that he's accepted that role. But even if it was skewed more to, oh yeah, Melo's still doing his Melo thing, I just don't see why people are freaking out over that. Like, he's starter Melo taking up 38 minutes and doing that 6 to 8 times in a game and missing more than he's taking. And for me, it's just like, nah, man, let Melo be Melo a little, especially given Frank Vogel's system. And given the fact that it's clear that he's changed his game up enough that it's not going to hurt us. And I want Melo to be a little bit frisky with his ISO ball stuff. Because in the same token, do people get mad when Lou Williams or Jordan Clarkson are ISOing? No, because that's who they are. So why are people getting mad that Melo's doing it, given the fact that he's also 6'9 and taller than those guys? You know what I'm saying? So yeah, your added thoughts on that.
So I think it's so funny because Melo, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, but you know, Melo is kind of viewed as like a meme player at this point. You know what I mean? And it's kind of sad because this dude is still legit. I think what it is when a lot of guys from, you know, I guess his class or his age range, you know, started kind of peaking, you know, around the time they're 31, 32 years old or whatever, it almost felt like Melo was starting a decline. Like if you look at his career stats, that was around the time where he was at the end of his run with the Knicks. You know, it seemed like pretty clear that team wasn't going anywhere. You know what I mean? And his stats started to dip. And then he went to OKC for a year and everyone was like, maybe this will resurrect him. He's playing with Russell Westbrook now and Paul George, and like, let's see how that turns out. His stats went further down. His shooting numbers started going down. And, you know, what I think happened to a lot of fans, and certainly myself during that time, right, is like, Melo has always kind of been in the minds of Laker fans. I think because we've tried to sign him like multiple times in the past and haven't been successful, or, you know, he's always been linked to us, you know, with Kobe and maybe as part of a team post Kobe. And because of that, it's like you kind of are always thinking about what this guy's doing and like looking at these numbers and thinking like, my God, that would be horrific. Like, I don't want to deal with that. Like a aging out of shape star on the, you know, on his way out or whatever. And then maybe you're right. Maybe it does like kind of cloud everything he has done for the last 3 years. I mean, if you just look, or 2 years, I should say, if you just look at his stats on Portland the last 2 years, objectively, like remove the name for a bench player, you know, yes. I guess one of the years he started, but the second year he was off the bench and his stats like didn't really change. If anything, he got better at shooting. So like, you know what I mean? And across the board shooting numbers. So it's just like, he has put together some amazing lines. His efficiency has gone like, you know, through like just crazy through the roof. He's shooting more threes you know, at least as many threes as he has at like the peak of his career in terms of volume, you know, and with a lower shot. Actually, if you look at his number of threes attempted versus his, you know, as a percentage of his overall field goal attempts, and look at that now compared to, you know, when he was with the Knicks, for example, it's so much higher now. It's like he's taking as many threes as he's ever taken in his career, but he is attempting half the shots that, you know, he's mm-hmm. attempted in some of his stops. So it's you know, making up a huge portion of his game. He continues, because of his, you know, size and length and strength, to be like a decent rebounder when he's engaged. Certainly, like, surprisingly decent on the offensive glass. It seems like he's always just kind of there, like, mucking it up. I guess, like, I could go on and on about how great he's been for us, but I think, you know, it's so true that I think a lot of Laker fans have kind of put him in this almost like Dwight Howard category.
Yes.
Of like, yeah, like, we know who this guy is. You're not going to trick us. He's a joke, blah, blah, blah. And you just need to see it. And people are eventually going to change their tune, but I think it's going to take Melo. Look, he's not going to shoot 51% and 67% from three all year, but it's going to take him putting up, you know, kind of elite bench player type numbers for us this year. And if he does that, or comes close, right? Like, if he puts up numbers, and when I say elite, I'm not talking about, like, you know, whatever, but I'm talking about, like, numbers he put up, like, the last few years, I think a lot of people will start to come around.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said, and I'm kind of also focusing my point just on even the times that Melo is ISO Melo on this team. Like, do you have a problem with that? Because for me, I don't. And it's almost like you mentioned the Dwight comparison, and I think that's right on point, because people are acting like anytime Carmelo takes a contested mid-range jump shot in a Lakers uniform, that it's the same as when Dwight Howard wanted to post up. It is not the same, because Carmelo Anthony, those shots are in Carmelo Anthony's bag. Those shots were never in Dwight Howard's bag. So I don't know why people are overreacting to every little single ISO Melo shot. So,
well, I think in this age of analytics, right, people who understand analytics at, like, a very poor level are going to put, like, an overemphasis on things like, well, Daryl Morey says three and key, and if you shoot a mid-range jumper, it's, like, the worst shot you can take. That's, like, true for most players, because most players aren't, like, efficient enough to, or, like, good enough at shooting to, like, you know, be reliable in those situations. If I'm not saying, again, and I don't think either of us are suggesting that in Melo's case, it's not, as a general matter, better for him to take a three.
No, it is better.
To take
it
a two.
Is, yeah.
Obviously, it's better. You know what I mean? But on the other hand, it's like, there's so much basketball that happens. Like, I was actually looking at the numbers just a second ago, but, like, okay, so Melo's taken about 11 and a half shots a game so far, 11.7, let's call it 12 shots a game. Literally 6.0, 50% of those shots he's taking every game are three-pointers. Not every shot he takes is going to be a three-pointer. I think that's, like, a pretty good ratio. You know what I mean? If half his shots he's attempting are three-pointers. So, like, he's going to get looks in other ways. Like, and sometimes they're going to be mid-range because, for, you know, whatever reason, offense stalls or whatever, it's just going to happen. And yeah, you're right. People can't just overreact to that kind of stuff.
It's so funny, because it's almost like people all of a sudden want to one-dimensionalize Carmelo and force him to become Kyle Kuzma and just shoot threes. And it's like, why would we put him in a box when this guy can get into the post and harm people, you know?
Yeah.
And if LeBron James has the confidence to dump it down into Melo in the clutch, granted, he missed the shot, I don't care. He's going to make some of those too. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Let's give LeBron some credit, and Melo, you know, ninth scorer in NBA history, some credit for knowing that he can make that shot. If he's doing that against, like, two defenders, yeah, that's stupid. But for the most part, I mean, Melo is a tough shot maker in the mid-range. So I kind of just want to get that off my chest, because, again, on a team, especially given the context of our team, us trying to find offense with Russell Westbrook trying to find his own offense. Like, I even got into a semi-debate with somebody on Twitter who was saying that a open Russell Westbrook mid-range jump shot is better than a Carmelo Anthony post-up. And I was like, no, it is not. Like, when Russell Westbrook pulls up in transition for that mid-range J that he takes early in the shot clock, yeah, I guess it's open, but that's not a good shot, you know? As opposed to Melo jab-stepping a few times, turning around and fading away. Like, yes, does that seem inefficient? But in the grand scheme of the context of this team, hell, I'll take that over a guy who and I don't want to throw shots at Kyle Kuzma, who's not going to hit it, you know, from the outside or dribble the ball off his legs, et cetera, et cetera. So, with that said, we'll take it to break. And when we return, we'll just talk about why we think Melo is working outside of the obvious. He's hitting all of his shots and what we've liked so far with him in the lineups and how he's able been able to compensate for his objectively terrible defense, which is somewhat mitigated by his good hands, as we've stated earlier, and also his size. So we'll take it to break and we'll close our episode out that way. All right, so we are back. So Tommy, what's been working in your eyes with regards to Carmelo Anthony? I know Alex Regla has been putting a lot of very insightful, useful stuff on Twitter, and I think he recently wrote an article about what Carmelo Anthony has been contributing, even from an intangible perspective when he's not getting the ball or shooting, because, you know, he's setting these ghost screens and popping out every which way and forcing the defense to account for him. And it's been lethal, especially because Russell Westbrook, like I mentioned, has struggled to sort of find his footing offensively and find, frankly, the creases in the lanes with which he can, you know, drive and attack without getting an offensive foul call. And not being forced to shoot that mid-range jump shot. But one, as Alex Regla has pointed out, Carmelo Anthony is shooting it the quickest he's ever shot it with regards to catch and shoot threes and just pull up threes in general. He's letting that ball fly quickly, no hesitation. And again, that's a reason why we're fourth in the league in pace. Granted, you know, it's three games. By the time you listen to this, we'll probably have played one or two more games. But our pace is being helped by Carmelo Anthony shooting that ball without hesitation. I also feel like he's even tried looking for his teammates and started playmaking a little bit more too. I know a lot of people are, you know, talking about how he's still hijacking the offense, whatever, but he's had a couple nice drives and passes to different teammates. And he's also had a couple nice cuts to the basket where Westbrook has found him. He's been able to lay it up. He's had like a couple nice putback hustle plays where he got the offensive rebound, gets fouled, goes to the free throw line. Stuff like that where his size, his natural size is just, you know, it's just a positive where technically if he was 6'3", he'd be Malik Monk, right? He's just a good shooting offensive player who can't play defense. But guess what? Right. Carmelo Anthony is 6'9". He's strong. He has good hands. And that's why you see how well he's been able to exist, not only exist in lineups, but help lineups thrive. Because one, he's shooting a bunch of threes, but also he's been able to make up for his slow-footedness with his hands being able to strip guys of the ball when they drive it into the lane, maybe even able to get some blocks, but also help with the rebounding as well. And as you've mentioned before, he's just a strong, sturdy guy who can hold his ground and maybe body some guys off rebounds as well. So yeah, what have you seen that you've liked that's really working here?
I mean, I think you kind of summarized all of it. Sorry. No, you got it all. I mean, and again, I put myself in category of people who, before kind of seeing how this was all going to work on the floor, and honestly, even saying stuff in preseason and after the first game or two of this season about how I thought Melo looked defensively, like if he just gives anything remotely close to the effort he gave in the Memphis game, like in 2/3 of the games this year, we should be totally fine. I mean, that's like really all we need. He's not, because of his size, like you said, he offers something. And his, you know, he has hands, and I'm just going to throw this out there. This Carmelo Anthony, like having an amazing season at 37 years old on probably the most competitive team he's been on since it's some wild of those early like Nuggets fan, like early Nuggets teams he was on when he was like 22. Like this dude, that's going to be such a cool storyline for this team. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of see, I mean, who knows, right? Maybe we're going to look back and laugh at this, but you can sort of see like playoff time comes and this dude just like senses it. And it's like, this is time to like win my first championship after being in the league for 18 years or however long he's been in the league. And, you know, at 37 years old, when people said like, this was a joke team and, you know, he's a meme player, all that, it's just such a cool storyline to follow this year.
It is, because he's gonna have, if this keeps up obviously, but he's not just gonna be one of these Mitch Richmond type players where they come onto the Lakers and they barely get time, you know. Maybe something happens along the way that makes it that way, but as far as it's gone so far, like this guy is part of the big four. If you're going by the advanced analytics and the best five-man, three-man lineups, Carmelo Anthony's a part of them. And again, this is going to change when Trevor Ariza is here, when the screws get tightened in the playoffs and defense is needed. But with how we want to play, Carmelo Anthony fits that to a T. And I mentioned it before, because his shooting is so lethal and so dynamic, he's not just a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter, right? You've seen him a couple of times bobble passes, and he'll still take like a 1-2 dribble to the side and fade away and hit those threes, you know? Because he's such a lethal shooter, he is our most fungible plug-and-play offensive player, where in any lineup, if we need some sort of offense to grease the wheels or some sort of spacing, put Melo in there. You know what I'm saying? And he's worked so well with the AD at the five lineups that, I mean, if we do start AD at the five in some games, Melo's probably going to be in there, especially while Ariza's out. You know, we've already closed with that lineup with the four Hall of Famers plus Austin Reeves. So it, to your point, it is kind of crazy just to think about it, because I was in the same sort of mindset as you as well before Allen put it into my head that this dude's going to have a big role, that Melo would be this tertiary bench role sort of guy. But to the extent that he is, he's looking like a sixth man of the year candidate, right? Can you imagine if he wins that?
Yeah, well, be careful. Don't tell Miami Heat fans that. Don't give them that opinion, because they got Hero. They're all like jumping on.
That's true.
And he's off to an absurd start as well.
Well, hey, just being a candidate for that award at his age is kind of crazy. So, and the perception changing of him around the league and media, because let me tell you, Tommy, there are guys on the Open Floor podcast, Michael Pena, who was talking about how the Golden State Warriors got such a freaking steal in Nemanja Bjelica for the veteran minimum.
Meanwhile, Carmelo
Anthony, he's just not very good, and I don't know, he's going to be unplayable in the playoffs. And I'm like,
it's just like, it's amusing.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's so amusing, because I know we've had mixed results, and this applies to the team in general, and you know, more specifically, I guess Melo in this case, right? But we've had such mixed results early in the season, and I count preseason in that. And so it's just open season for like Laker haters to jump in and be like, here we go. Here's the one time of the year I get to say this, so I'm going to say it now. You know what I mean? And it's just so like, it's so easy, but it's also like early season NBA results are so absurd. The Milwaukee Bucks like beat the Nets on opening night. Like beat the crap out of them and then got blown out by 40 to Miami. And then Miami lost to like Cleveland. You know, it's just like all random, and, or, you know, Detroit or some team like that. Right. And it's just like, I don't know. It's crazy to react. But people are like also, you know, happy to have their hipster picks. And when it comes to stuff like free agency, and then look for any evidence that they were right. So whatever. It doesn't bother me that much.
Agree with you. All right, to close this episode, we've got about 5 minutes. Let's talk about the team in general. Quickly, DeAndre Jordan, what do we do with this guy? What have your thoughts been on DeAndre? And are you hoping that we eventually just phase him out and focalize it to just Dwight Howard if we go with a traditional big man? Because one way that we can sustain our three-point shooting, even with Carmelo's hot percentage and LeBron's hot percentage regressing, is if we boot one of these traditional big men out and replace him with one of our better shooting people. Or when Trevor Ariza comes in, he's going to soak up some of those minutes. So, yeah, DeAndre has been not good. He does stuff just because he is seven feet. But otherwise,
sometimes you need that, though.
Sometimes you need that. But, I mean, on defense, he's getting cooked and the spacing's jacked up. And Westbrook just plays better when Melo's on the floor and AD's at the five. And
I just feel like if we're not going to play AD at the five, which, or start AD at the five, or play him significant minutes, however you want to quantify it, which actually, look, I'm not going to argue that right now, because I think a big part of that is getting Ariza back, and just some of our other depth generally, THT also. But if we are going to play DeAndre, the biggest problem I have right now with him is how many minutes he's getting.
Yes.
I know it's crazy, because it's like you look at it and it's like, what do you mean he's getting 14 minutes? I'm like, yeah, he should be getting like five, or, you know, like one stretch in the first quarter to start the game, maybe a very short stretch in the second quarter. But like, you need to rotate this guy out a lot.
Dude,
faster.
Tommy, in the third quarter last game, Frank Vogel waited to the 5 minute mark to take him out.
Yeah.
Why can't it be the 7 minute mark? Give him 5 minutes at the top of the first, 5 minutes at the top of the third. It's just, why does he go so long with it? It's just,
I don't know. It's really frustrating. But it's like DeAndre had a good stretch, I think, in his first, like he played a 7-minute stretch, to your point, in the first quarter of the last game against Memphis. I would say for the first like 4 minutes of that, he was like decently effective.
Yeah, so quit while you're ahead.
Quit while you're ahead. We used to say this about Rondo all the time. Like, Frank has to have a better temperature on when Rondo is like burned his effectiveness and pull him out of the game, right? And I feel like that's kind of like the same with DeAndre this year.
Well, and it's so much easier to see with DeAndre too, just because, I mean, he looks washed up. Maybe conditioning gets better or whatever, but I mean, yeah. Anyways, let's move on to Austin Reeves, because Austin Reeves is a freaking basketball player. HBK, he's in 4 of the top 5 3-man lineups of the Lakers. He has no fear. He's popping these threes like he's still at Oklahoma. Not a care in the world that it's Hall of Famer LeBron James or Hall of Famer Carmelo Anthony, Hall of Famer Russell Westbrook slinging him these passes. And he, I mean, outside of just being able to knock down an open shot, which is, you know, the baseline level of what you ask for from any player, but God, he's like a rookie. His defense has been solid. His positioning on the floor, he's like setting screens for LeBron and just like popping out the right way. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how good Austin Reeves is, or I guess just even how solid he is, because Caruso, jokes notwithstanding, he's a potentially a better player than Caruso. Not as athletic or explosive, but as an all-around guy who can do stuff. I mean, you've seen some of his dribble drive plays where he's passing it to Carmelo on the baseline and he's able to create stuff off his own dribble in a pinch, and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if anything, you know, Reeves kind of gives you a little bit of confidence that this team could look a lot better once we get some of our depth filled in. Because if a 23-year-old rookie who gives any sort of effort on defense can have this kind of overall team impact, it kind of gives you a good feeling about where we might be headed, you know, in terms of defense. But I've been super impressed with Reeves. I was texting you like crazy after the first game, being like, you know, it's not a, just like a, you know, it's not funny because he's Hillbilly Kobe or whatever. It's just like, he's legitimately good. I know it was preseason, but he showed that he can stay in front of guys. He showed it at summer league. He showed it at preseason. I've seen nothing yet to suggest that, you know, he could be less effective than some of these other guys. And he got his shot and he showed why he could be so good. It's like, he doesn't put up a ton of counting stats, but he stays in front of his man. He doesn't turn it over. He makes smart plays.
He can rotates well. I mean,
he rotates like super well. Like I, he's earned the spot and it's nice to see him succeed.
Yeah. So I hope we can make him one of our players that we hold on to for the semi-long-term future as we bridge the gap between LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Lastly, quickly to end this episode, Westbrook had his best game the last game against the Grizzlies. By the time you listen to this, we'll see how he does against the Spurs. But his playmaking was on full display against the Grizzlies, and he looked really good putting pressure on the rim, driving it into the paint. Like that one pass he made where he looked off Carmelo Anthony and dumped it down to Anthony Davis for a dunk was super impressive. He had another lob to Anthony Davis, so he already has more than Dennis Schroeder did all of last year. So he has two lobs to Anthony Davis.
That's crazy.
I mean, I texted it to you. The pull-up mid-range jump shots in transition and early shot clock situations are so freaking annoying. But that notwithstanding, at least his vision and playmaking is there. He still had like 9 turnovers, I think. So that's going to be a work in progress. But I think him finding positive ways to contribute, and right now it seems like it's going to be through assists, which is why I feel a little bit more confident about my, you know, preseason prediction that Russell Westbrook would find his way to double-digit assists. Because, yeah, his offense is struggling, and if his jump shot doesn't come around, he may have to rely on just being a playmaker and LeBron James being the off-ball guy, especially if LeBron continues to shoot the shit out of the ball from three-point land as well. This is how it's going to work potentially, where, you know, maybe Westbrook does only average 18 to 20 points a game, but has double-digit assists.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you're totally right about your prediction, right? I actually went the opposite way, but I think through the first 3 games, we've sort of seen, I think your prediction is it's probably getting me closer to that, right? So I thought Westbrook was going to be a lot more aggressive. Everyone's playing him to pass his entire career. He's got other guys who can handle the ball for one of the few times. And I mean, he's had good teammates, but not anyone like LeBron, right? So, you know, I thought maybe all of that would contribute to him focusing more on scoring and actually putting up higher scoring numbers than people were expecting. But I think Westbrook's on this team, because LeBron can actually shoot pretty well. Again, not saying his numbers are going to hold up, but the last few years he's been at least league average for, and he takes pretty difficult shots. So that's not bad. You know, if Westbrook can take the lead in initiating the offense, I think that will keep him more engaged because LeBron can do so much off the ball. It'll give Westbrook like a chance to put his imprint on the game without necessarily scoring. And then you see that he has those like random, like he had a random 9-point scoring burst, like 9-0 run against the Grizzlies by himself, like in a span of a few, like a minute or something. So that's where he's the most dangerous as a player overall. And so I hope that we continue to push that. And I think a big step, frankly, toward getting in that direction, which is Frank's realization or decision or whatever, to take Rajon Rondo out of the rotation and take away those minutes where Rondo was playing with Westbrook in those lineups that made sense to nobody. So, you know, it's, I think they're starting to see that a little bit too, that Westbrook is probably at his best when he has the ball in his hand. So why not just let him do that, you know, and he's going to get rack up a lot of assists doing that.
Yeah. And another positive thing was Westbrook kind of getting swaggy with his finishes. He had some spectacular finishes in that Grizzlies game, especially the one where he burst to the basket and then finished it with his left in a kind of scoop-de-doo sort of way. So it's nice to see Westbrook, where in the first two games or so, he was leaving chippies on the rim. You know what I'm saying? Like missing layups he typically makes. So it's nice to see him get the Russell Westbrook-like ones where he's going like 150 miles an hour and he's able to get amongst the trees and still be able to finish. So, I think that's just naturally going to get better as we move along and as we, you know, add the transition finishing game to our pace. Because right now the pace I feel like is coming from Carmelo Anthony's three-point shooting, quick three-point shooting. So the more we're able to get our defense in order, force stops, and get out into transition where Westbrook can take advantage of a defense on its heels, I think it'll look so much more better for Westbrook. And then once he's hit like four layups in a row, and then he can take that pull-up mid-range jump shot in transition as a heat check, but not as a first resort. Please, Westbrook.
Yeah.
I beg of you. All right, with that said, we'll leave it there. We'll catch you next time, hopefully after a slew of new Lakers wins after they play against the Spurs, the Oklahoma City Thunder. We got some couple games against Houston, et cetera. It should hopefully be a fortuitous run for us here over the next week or so where we face some bottom barrel teams. And hopefully we take advantage because Anthony Davis, by the way, shout out to that guy. He's still playing tremendous defense. So that's nice to see. With that said, I will catch you next time, Tommy.
Later.
Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.